the buzzer McCord on its way. Oh my goodness!
They have to get it. There's no timeouts. They do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to Courtside, the definitive college basketball podcast. No, it's the world's greatest college basketball podcast. I'm Seth Greenberg, along with my sidekick, B-Squared, Dan Dockage. We're going to have an unbelievable day today. We're going to talk Villanova staying number one in their domination against Xavier. We're going to talk a little bit Michigan State and their near disastrous home loss to a Rutgers basketball team. We're going to have a chance to visit with Chris Beard, the head basketball coach at Texas Tech, who's done an absolutely phenomenal job at Texas Tech, creating a culture, creating an environment, and developing one of the deepest, most talented teams in college basketball. T-Squared, how's your week been?
Unbelievable week. Are you kidding me? Sunday, my son hits a shot at half court, but not half court, right in front of Izzo to help Ohio State get a win Tuesday.
Being in front of Izzo, did it make that much better?
For me personally, yeah. Yeah. Karma's a mother, man.
You're unbelievable.
Karma's a mother. Talk smack. Get smacked. You know what I'm saying? and then I had a great one. I did. I had a great one. Purdue and Michigan at Michigan. And your boy Jay Will said that Purdue is the best team in the country. Wow. Good for
him.
In
this moment in time, maybe.
It'd be tough.
Imagine if they lost that game.
No, right.
He was rooting so hard. It was unbelievable. He was like, at the end of that game, he was losing his mind. It was like he was watching Duke back in the day. I mean, and I have to admit, because after I picked Iowa as my sleeper team in the Big Ten, a team that could get to the second week, and he's been killing me, and I needed an opportunity to smack him back, but I have to – Purdue is good. But let's talk about the best team in the country before we get to Purdue.
Absolutely.
How about Villanova? Now, this is their second time being number one. They've been almost invincible in Philadelphia against, well, they have been against Xavier, a team that a lot of people, you know, think is a potential Final Four team, but a team that was coming off a loss in a game that Trayvon Blewett got shut out in the second half. And I never thought I'd even say that, Trayvon Blewett getting shut out in a half. But Villanova, once again, to me, they're an old school team with an old soul. And like, I'll tell you one thing that kind of resonated with me. Like before the game, they do this like circle around Jay Wright. And he talks to him and he's communicating. Now he coaches that team really hard. People look at Jay Wright in the pocket square and the suits and, you know, the George Clooney-ish look. He coaches that team really hard. But as I watched the start of that game, he has his team's total attention. I mean, they buy in to everything and anything he says, whether it's jump stopping, shot faking, ball faking, being in a gap, making the right play. And that was an absolute clinic last night. Not that they won and how many points they won by, but how they won the game in terms of their alertness defensively and their willingness to, their unselfishness offensively. They got a little Virginia in them. Totally different style, but they got a little Virginia in them. What do you think?
Well, I thought defensively they were terrific. And you mentioned the word alertness. And let's just go through. They have veteran guys that you're not coaching effort. You're not coaching buy-in. How many times did we talk about buy-in? Well, when you're coaching buy-in, you're not coaching alertness. You're just coaching guys doing what the hell you want every day. And I don't think that's ever in place. So what ends up happening is your defensive or offensive game plan, your transition game plan, whatever you have, is what you're getting. You're getting to your team, if I'm making sense here. So the alertness comes from that. If so many teams like right now, they don't buy in. Oh, I can't get to them. All that kind of happy horse bleep. But you don't have that with Villanova. You can put a game plan in and adapt that game plan because you got veteran guys that are Villanova. And I think you saw that last night. Like, you know, sometimes you say, okay, a team was 3-for-17. They just missed good shots. No, they didn't. No, they did not ever, meaning Xavier, get comfortable offensively in that basketball game. Now, he scored some points in the second half, but everybody scores some points in the second half. But they never got comfortable, ever. And so shots that maybe look good, they're not, because you're surprised as an offensive player that you get that shot against an alert defense. So you're exactly right. Villanova, a little misstep at Butler, but a lot of teams have missteps at Butler. Number one team in the country, probably have been so all year.
Yeah, I just think they're so, you know, I like to use the word connected. And I'll tell you, Jalen Brunson, I'm going to give you, you know, everyone plays like someone. And it's not exactly right, but to me, a couple years back, people talked about Malcolm Brogdon. He doesn't, you know, how quick is he? Can he shoot the ball? Is he a point guard? Is he a two guard? And he ended up going in the second round, and he's obviously had a great start to his NBA career. Jalen Brunson is this year's Malcolm Brogdon. And he gets the ball anywhere he wants, when he wants to. He makes shots. He plays to contact. He puts people on his chest defensively. He goes by his man. His man doesn't go by him. What do you think of that comparison?
I think it's good. You know, I think Jalen Brunson plays like a better Rick Brunson. Like, you remember Rick Brunson? Mm-hmm. Rick Brunson was a really good player, played in the NBA. Now, Jalen may score a little more, but when I remember coaching against Rick Brunson, Jalen is Rick Brunson, but, you know, part two. You know, we've made him better. We've, you know, like that old $6 million man thing. You know, we have improved him or whatever the hell it is. And I don't disagree with what you're saying about Brogdon, because there's going to be questions. Let's be honest. There's going to be questions. There's going to be questions about quickness. There's going to be questions about ability to get a shot off. Can he guard? All that kind of stuff. But Jalen Brunson, to me, if you want one guy, big game, I'm not mad at Joe Barry. I think Joe Barry would be a guy. But Jalen Brunson, you'd be hard-pressed to find anybody that you would rather have with the ball in his hands. I think.
You know, you talked about buy-in, and now you're a man of all seasons. I understand that. I mean, a man of all seasons.
Yes.
How about, got to go back to this, because how about Alabama, Georgia, halftime, we're not moving the ball.
Right.
We have a guy that's only got two losses in his career, an absolute grown man. Oh, by the way, we're going to make a change. We're going to talk to these two quarterbacks. We're going to come out. We're going to make a change. And everyone is on board. Everyone.
Including Hurts.
Exactly. And the manner in which he – that's got to hurt, but the manner in which he carried himself, where the good of the group was more important than himself. But name me another coach. Saban?
Oh,
Kay? How many other guys could have done that and got the buy-in he got?
Jay Wright probably could, if
we're
going to basketball.
That's what I'm saying, without a doubt.
Yeah, I think Urban probably could in football if we're jumping, but Krzyzewski probably could. But, Seth, the thing about it is I thought everybody covered themselves in glory, you know, and that's a lesson for people. Like, I believe this. I think high-level football players, you know, and even though there's some knuckleheads that do really stupid things, they're so far beyond basketball players in terms of not being selfish. You know, basketball player might sit, you know, how many times have you seen a basketball player sit on a bench and act like a 2-year-old when he gets taken out and the coach says something to him? When they made that switch, Saban looked great for doing it. 2A looked great for doing it. And I was really happy that Tom Rinaldi interviewed Jalen Hurts, and they showed Jalen Hurts' reaction, and it was such joy at winning that I think sometimes we think every kid, you know, acts like an idiot when he gets taken out or yelled at. One of the kids did for Alabama, but I was so happy that we at ESPN showed Hurts, because it showed what real class, real teammate, real leadership is all about, and being all about winning. And I thought that was cool, but you're right. Not a lot of teams could do that, but the great ones can.
So. Speaking of teams that are pretty good and buying, and I think Izzo, I know you might not agree, Izzo has a similar situation, and I watch it with Miles Bridges, because Michigan State won last night. Miles Bridges didn't score a bucket in the first half. Yet, I thought Miles Bridges made some plays down the stretch. He chose to drive it, got to the line. He didn't make both free throws. But as I look at Michigan State, being the hunted, it's a long season. But after that game, as the game ends, and Cassius Winston threw a heck of a pass, by the way, on that left-handed skip pass across on a little bit of crack screen, and And obviously, Langford makes a big shot. But if you look at the end of that game, the biggest smile, the biggest bounce in his step was Miles Bridges. And that's why I think that Michigan State, in the end, even though they've had a hiccup and they're not playing maybe how they would like to play, I still think they're a Final Four team because of the way Bridges, he's all about winning, and he is a humble superstar that carries himself in a way that's almost mind-boggling in today's society.
I don't disagree with that at all. My problem with Bridges is, what does he have a game? What's his game? I mean, I can go to the rim once in a while. He can hit a step-up three, but what's his game? I don't disagree with all of that, and I think when Bridges came back, he understood that he could get a lot more out of Tom Izzo than he could anything else, and good for him. I had a chance to talk to a couple NBA guys before the game, Michigan, you know, at Michigan, and they asked me about Bridges, and I said to Sam, what's his game? I don't know. I know it's going to be good in college, and I just hope that the kid – and this sounds weird, but this is the world of the NBA. I hope the kid didn't make a mistake coming back in terms of where his earnings are. Do you know what I like?
Yeah, I think he's going to be first. Here's the thing.
But I think he's getting a little bit exposed here. Like
playing his small forward.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, when you watched his and I was at the game, watching Ohio State, Michigan State, the difference in level of comfortability, if that's even a word, between being a small forward and Kata Bates-Diop and being a small forward and the efficiency of Kata Bates-Diop as opposed to Bridges, it wasn't even close. Like, you know what I'm saying, Seth? And that doesn't mean Bridges isn't any good. I'm glad he stayed, I think Michigan State is still my favorite to win the national championship. But for him personally, I'm like, man, like, he's not Draymond Green, where Draymond Green would just bring the ball down the floor and do it comfortably and talk and lead. You know what I mean? He's just not. And it's interesting to me, that kid. That kid's the most interesting.
I still think he's got more game than you think. I think, first of all, here's a couple things. I think that team, they can play through Nick Ward. Jaren Jackson's upside is absolutely incredible.
It's monstrous.
It's monstrous.
Yeah. Just got to stay out of foul trouble.
He's got to stay out of foul trouble, because if he stays out of foul trouble, let's face it, I think they're an exponentially better team. And that's them. We can talk about DeAndre Ayton, we can talk about Marvin Bagley, but in the end, if it's Marvin Bagley and Jaren Jackson, that's going to be a fun matchup to watch. I just think that he's almost reluctant to try to take over a game. And
I've heard people say, I just don't think he has game enough.
Well, I think here's the thing. I think Tom needs to. I'd like to see him post him a little bit more.
Yes,
run him to the block and let him fight for position. I think if he's going to play to three, he's got to run the court harder.
Yes,
and more consistently.
Yes,
which I think is important.
All right. I used to say this on broadcast. The money play for Michigan State with Draymond Green was Draymond Green left block when they needed something, or when Draymond Green needed to go. So he, like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's skyhook. You had something to go to when you were Draymond Green, period. I just wonder, and I think Bridges would probably be better if he's as comfortable down there, because he's bigger. He's more athletic than Draymond. But he doesn't have Draymond's it, I guess is what I'm saying, Seth.
Well, Draymond, let's look at this. I mean, Draymond Green is, in my opinion, one of the most unique players in the NBA. He's an NBA All-Star.
Yeah, but I'm talking about him in college. I'm talking about him when he wasn't good enough to be a first-round pick, according to people.
No, I hear you, and he wasn't. Let's get to something a little different. We're gonna have Texas Tech's head coach Chris Beard with us in a second, but obviously the news of Andrew Jones, the guard from Texas, being diagnosed with leukemia. I had a game. Texas game a couple of weeks ago, and he was actually nursing a wrist and injury, and I had a chance to spend a whole bunch of time with him. And to me, just the thought of this young person who's so vibrant and so alive having this battle on his hands, it's devastating. Let's hear what Shaka Smart had to say about it.
Well, it's hard because, when our guys found out about Andrew's diagnosis, there was a lot of tears. There was, everyone in the room was extremely upset. And obviously it puts basketball in perspective because these guys view Andrew like a brother. But again, they did a terrific job of just deciding to play the game for him. And I think that gave them a sense of purpose and motivation to go play the game the right way.
That was from the Freddie and Fitzsimmons show. And Dan, I know you do so much work in the community, in your community, for young people that are fighting the fight against cancer. And just your first, you know, one, it puts everything in perspective. You know, I was with Texas a couple of weeks ago. They just came off a win against Tennessee State. They didn't play very well, and they, you know, you could see there was almost a cloud over the program. They were trying to fight through it. They got a young, talented team and all that. But it just puts things in perspective of what you think is hard and difficult and you're impacted by winning and losing. I mean, this is so much bigger. And I know, you know, the work you do in your community is incredible with the young people that are fighting this fight.
Well, here's the thing I've learned, Seth. I've learned that continued support is huge. We had this with Chuck Pagano here in Indianapolis when he had leukemia. I think it was his first year. And, you know, Chuck, the continued support of Chuck means so much. And talk to any cancer victim. You know, hearing from people, the prayers that people say, the outpouring continuing is such a big boost, Seth, for helping people get through this. Because, let's be honest, the mind is unbelievable. We don't use nearly, we use like 2% of our brain and all that kind of stuff. The mind can overcome a lot of stuff, and positive approach, any cancer advocate will tell you. So we have to make sure that in Andrew Jones's case, I think, as a basketball community, we don't forget 2 days from now. We don't move on to the next scandal or the next great shot. I mean, whatever it is. We keep him in our thoughts, in our tweets, in our Instagrams, in our posts. Because, look, he's going to read that, and you know how it is. When you get excited about something, you forget, and you perform better. And I just think it's so important that we don't have a one day, oh, Andrew Jones has leukemia, I'm so sad, and then we move on. We just got to keep going with him and got to keep
standing with him and letting him know
how just prop him up a little bit all the time, because he's going to be paying attention and he needs it. And that's, I'm telling you, ask anybody that deals. And I've talked to so many nurses over here at Riley Children's Center and have become friends with so many people over there that they all say the same thing, man. Just being there, being around somebody, a note, a tweet, or whatever, is huge, and we got to make sure we do that as a basketball community for Andrew Jones.
No doubt about it. And, you know, speaking of Andrew Jones, speaking of Texas, schools in Texas, you know, the Big 12 has been phenomenal. And you know, you saw Trae Young. Now, he had back-to-back games. He had a play against Javon Carter in the defense of West Virginia, and then he had a turnaround 48 hours later. And that's the craziest thing. Those Saturday-Monday turnarounds in the Big 12, I think, are the toughest turnarounds in college basketball. And then he had to deal with Keenan Evans in the Texas Tech defense, which is as good as any. Struggled in the first half, 1-for-12, and then he's a volume shooter. They got him off the ball a little bit, then they got him back on the ball. Just, look, you and I are fossils, world's greatest podcast. Have a couple of fossils. We've seen some pretty good dudes. What this guy's doing, and he's got a green light, but what he's doing, to me, at the level he's doing it against the competition he's doing against, it's almost mind-boggling. Now, you've seen him up front, up in person. How is this dude doing this?
Well, he's doing it because he has that unique toughness. Like, he looks like he's 10 when you talk to him, right? I mean, you're sitting there talking to him at that little stage there after the game, and you're like, man, this dude's like 10 years old. But he just, you can tell nobody's worked harder on his game. You can tell he's fearless. You can tell all of the basketball things, great jump shot, great spin, and total confidence. But, Seth, you know, for people to think, and I thought it was great that they ended up winning. This is what amazes me about him. Like, he's not a pig. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, no, I agree, totally.
Yeah, and he has a bad shooting night, so all of a sudden the team doesn't lose by 72. I mean, they end up winning last night. I mean, it's one of those deals where for somehow, he's like Steph Curry in a lot of ways, but the most way is he's not a pig. He's not a ball hog. He's not a disruptor of his own team. And to me, that's how he's doing it more than anything. Everybody accepts it, knows it, and goes with it. I don't know. It's amazing. It's fun. He's the best I've ever seen offensively in college. Best I've seen.
He's been incredible. State in that league. Kansas survives Iowa State. And that's the only way to describe it. I mean, you think about it. Malik Newman, who's struggled, who's taken out of the starting lineup, comes off the bench, 27 points, more step-in threes, less off the bounce, makes the biggest defensive play in the game. I mean, the play made in Donovan Jackson, it's staying in the stance, contesting the shot when it's a two-point game was huge. I think like 60% of their shots are from the three-point line. And, you know, the old saying, I know playing and working for Coach Knight, well, obviously my former head coach that I played for, Alabama, used to say, you know, you live by the three, you die by the three.
Yeah.
You know, it used to be back in the day, you live by the jumper, you die by the jumper. Right. Now it's just that jumper's 3 points.
Right.
But this team, so reliant on that perimeter game, is this team even have a chance to be built to win six games or four games to get to a Final Four when one bad shooting night and they're out, unless they become this absolute intense, fly-around, disruptive, aggressive defensive team? What do you make of Kansas right now?
I think that Kansas is one of many teams that is good. Like, few teams are great, right? But they're good. You know, they're good. But they're not great. Here's the thing that I've always said, and we, you know, coaching at Indiana, we had this, you know, back in the 80s. And their success is predicated, I swear, and this sounds stupid, on history, tradition, and just what we do. But I think this year it may fall a little short in that league more I watch West Virginia. But Malik Newman, you talked about it, Seth. This is a guy that, I mean, you know, recruiting war.
Stayed home? He stayed home?
Yeah, McDonald's All-American. And if you can get him in that role that you talked about, 27 points, step-up jump shots, I think you've got a guy, right? I mean, if you want him to be an all-around player and you think every McDonald's All-American is created equal, he ain't that guy. He's never been that guy. So, you know, I just think that right now it's more, you know, good guards, history, tradition, tough to win in that building, although Texas Tech did. That's going to carry them. I don't know that they're a Final Four team, but I'll say this.
Who is?
Right. I mean, like, I think Michigan State and Villanova are. I think North Carolina is. Like, if North Carolina struggles with that one. I know you do.
I struggle with that one. You think they can win? Look, how much better does that front court have to be? And here's my other point. I love Luke May. He's an unbelievable story.
Yeah.
What he does, he makes shots. He's big. He's strong. You didn't like my Dave DeBuscher comparison. That's okay. I appreciate that. You didn't like my Kevin Love comparison.
No.
Okay. I appreciate that. You said it's Kevin Young was 6'11 or whatever, 7 foot, whatever it was.
I know.
But here's the deal. Against the best teams, can he get it done? Number one. If people take him, the things that Carolina likes to do, transition second shots in the paint, which I think they're not the same paint team they used to be. I think it's amazing the job that Roy Williams does. I think that he put that Virginia game on himself. Virginia was better than him. Virginia took away what Carolina does well. That's what Virginia does. They take you out of transition. They take you off the glass. They make it a half-court game. They double the post, take the ball out of your post-up game. So, I mean, like, yeah, I think they're good. I don't think they're Final Four good. I think Roy's doing an incredible job with his team, as he usually does. But I don't see greatness in him.
I thought this. I saw Carolina two games in a row. I saw them whoop up on Ohio State, and I saw them play down the stretch with Wake. Then I saw Michigan State live last week or this week, and I thought, man, and I know this sounds idiotic because Michigan State pounded North Carolina. I thought, man, North Carolina is much more dangerous than Michigan State.
Yikes.
I know. It's not right. I know it's not right. I'm just telling you, you know how as a coach you've seen enough and you get this feeling internally, Seth, like, all right.
I used to think about the team I was playing against. They were much better than us.
Always. Like, they got much more weapons. Who the hell did we recruit? You yell at your assistants. You dummy. Why is he there, not here? But I'm just saying, Seth, I also think, and I know, I don't know whether this is a popular opinion or not. I don't know. But I've always thought that Roy Williams is one of the maybe the all-time best coach in NCAA history.
I hear you. Who's a pretty good coach?
Talk to me.
I'll tell you, the guy that we're going to have on in a second here.
Yeah, he is.
Pretty good coach. Chris Beard is a guy to me. I love his DNA because, like, you know, to me, he's a lifer, or he's a coach's coach. He's a guy that just, you know, you could tell there's nothing blue blood about this guy. I mean, he's a guy that just wants to be in the gym. He wants to develop players. He wants to develop a team. He's never had anything given to him. He chose that, you know what, his destination job is Lubbock, Texas. And you know what he's doing there, to me, is incredible. And he's going to continue to do it, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, man. Oh, yeah. His teams play so hard. And they, like, you know, there's three ways you play hard. Obviously, cutting offensively, posting strong offensively, defensively in a stance, help side, sprinting back to recovery, high hands, low feet, all that stuff. And then sprinting the floor end to end both ways. Like, we always talk about sprinting the floor defense to offense. Well, sprinting the floor offense to defense sometimes is uphill for guys. You know what I mean? And his teams do all of that hard. With nobody you've ever heard of other than, like, you know every player in the country. But nobody else has heard of any player out here, and he's got him as a top 10 team.
Yeah.
Pretty good stuff.
No doubt about it. And when we come back, we're going to visit with Texas Tech coach Chris Beard.
I love sports. I just wish they could be with me always. They say you don't choose the app. The app chooses you. It is everything I could ever want in a sports companion. It can stream the games and shows that I love, and it's there whenever I need it. I never thought I could find an app that loves sports as much as I do. Until now.
Download the ESPN app to stream ESPN Radio and all the ESPN networks now.
I'd like to welcome in Texas Tech head coach Chris Beard. And Coach, we really appreciate you being with us. And one of the things is because to me, and you didn't hear it, but we were just talking about you a little bit, you're just a dude that likes to coach. You're a dude that is the farthest thing from any blue blood. You just want to take a group of guys, get them in a gym, help them get better, help them develop, and make them a team. Who's had the greatest influence on you in developing that passion for the game and coaching basketball?
I appreciate those kind words. That's a compliment. You know, it just goes back to, like, when I grew up, the coaches that I played for. I was very fortunate in Texas high school basketball. I played for two Hall of Fame coaches, Mike Kuhnstedt, who most of you guys know is on the recruiting trail now with Texas Hoops and the Shootouts, and then Terry Priest. So it's kind of a unique break to play for two Hall of Fame coaches in high school. And then just certainly everybody I worked for, I get a lot of attention having worked for Coach Knight, and I'm proud of my association with Coach and Pat. But I've also worked for some other good guys, whether it be, you know, Danny Casper, Shannon Hayes, just all the guys that I've worked for. I'm very appreciative of my past.
Your team is built with just junkyard dogs. I mean, your team is built with guys now, really talented junkyard dogs. Those two freshmen are terrific, but as you try to figure out how you're going to win at Texas Tech, what is the model? What do you want Texas Tech basketball to look like?
Well, I think above all, we want to be an unselfish team that really competes on a day-to-day basis. I think everybody in college basketball competes on, you know, the nights of games, the first or second practices of the year, but we want to be a team that has consistency. And to me, that kind of starts in recruiting. a lot of times, you know, when coaches whine about what they got, I mean, they're in college basketball, you're the one that recruit the players that you coach. So we always tried in recruiting just to try to find guys that love the game more than anything. And our staff this year has done a great job, especially with this second recruiting class. You know, we want to be a team that it gets better. You know, we're not in a situation right now where we're getting one and done, things like that, even though I would welcome the chance to coach the best players in the country. And I think we'll get the program to that point at some point. But our guys have got to get better. And I think that's what's happened our first couple of years here. We inherited a great base from Tubby Smith and his staff, Vince and Joe. And those guys did a great job here. And so development's a big, big part. Recruiting's where all the attention's going to be with today's social media and the rankings and all that. But, you know, I've always believed that guys can get better too.
Coach, let's talk about that. You know, you mentioned you want to bring in guys that love basketball. We hear so much, as you said, moaning and complaining about today's kids, today's players, blah, 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 blah. You find it difficult to find kids that you can identify as guys that love hoops?
No, not at all. I think, again, you kind of get what you recruit. And
yeah.
So, you know, I think when somebody told me this a long time ago, I really stuck to me about five or six things that, you know, are just on every page in my office. But, you know, it's, in recruiting, it's not the players that you don't get that get you beat. You know, like we really want this kid. We recruit him for 3 years. We get a visit, but we just don't get him. That's not eventually what gets you beat. It's the guys that you do sign, that you do take, that are one of your 13, that can't play or don't fit into your culture or don't love the game or aren't as good as you thought they were. So with us, I mean, I don't think recruiting's hard. It's just it's a matter of finding somebody that fits what you're all about.
You're no joke to play for. Like, you know, you're tough, right? I mean, how much of that do you explain to somebody before, or do you not have to because you're not messing with somebody that might have a problem with being told no or with being told, hey, this isn't the right way to do it. Let me show you the right way to do it.
A little bit of both. I mean, one of our core values is truth-telling. We really believe in, you know, when things are good, lay it out there. When things are bad, lay it out there. But, you know, I'm convinced that great players want to be coached. You know, I tell the Michael Jordan story all the time. He was one of the first guys that hired his own trainer. I mean, why? Because he wanted to be coached. As human beings, you can only push yourself so much. Like, I'm a big history guy. I study Muhammad Ali. And, you know, there's a reason why he had Dungey there pushing him, because you can only push yourself so much as a human being. That's why coaching exists. And so we tell the guys all the time, like, we're going to coach you hard. We're going to bring it every day. We'll never let you down. You know, I tell the players all the time, if you ever come out to practice one day and you don't think that I'm bringing it, like you think that I'm in a bad mood or I'm soft or I'm looking at my cell phone during practice, then just call me out right there. Call me out. But my promise to you is we'll bring it every single day. And I think the special thing about this year's Texas Tech team is we've got some older guys that have really embraced that, and then we got some younger guys that are following.
I'll tell you, straight talk. There is nothing better than straight talk. And it's interesting. I'm not sure I ever heard a coach say he wanted his players to hold him accountable, which is great. Because I've been to a bunch of practices where I see dudes looking at their cell phones, coaches, and it absolutely drives me crazy. I absolutely sit there and have out-of-body experiences like going, what are we doing here? We're telling our players or your players to, like, hey, don't worry about the static, and yet in the most important 2.5 hours of the day, we got dudes like on their phone. So I love the straight talk. And you talk about, you know, your team, and obviously Keaton Evans is a special player. I mean, he's got a toughness about him. Inheriting a player like that is special. But the two freshman guards you recruited, I mean, again, I don't know anything about the recruitment. Obviously, I know Jared is a Lubbock kid. Those two guys are really good. You went back to Texas Tech after being at UNLV for a cup of coffee because to you it was a destination. How do you get a kid to buy into that Texas Tech can be not only a destination but a place that can compete with anyone in America?
Well, one thing we really talk about, Coach, is, you know, we love dreamers. Like, I didn't get into this years ago to coach the second best players or make the tournament, or I want to win a national championship. I want to coach in that last game on Monday night where it's me and one other guy coaching and everybody else is in sports bars around the country. Or maybe a few guys are at the game. I'm not afraid of that. Like, I'm not afraid to tell people that. I was telling people that years ago when I was coaching in the ABA, living in a motel. No, I'm going to do this. And it's not arrogance. It's confidence. Like, if you don't believe in what you're saying yourself, then how are you supposed to get players to believe in it? So really we've got some tough guys on our team. We've got some guys that are dreamers too. Like, we don't have a lot of guys that are recruited by the Blue Bloods. We got guys that are, you know, recruiting's getting better. We're starting to get guys that have other Big 12 offers, but we haven't beat Kansas or Kentucky or UCLA on a player yet. But I think eventually we will, because, you know, some of those guys, they want to be a part of making history and not a part of history. Like, and so on this year's team, we've got some guys that really kind of share the same vision as we do. That we want to build a program that you know, can play on that last Monday.
I got to follow up on that, because, I mean, how many years ago was it you were hanging out coaching something, like ABA team or something that didn't even have any players? I mean, like, people got to understand, like, your journey, you're like, it's taken you, how old are you now?
44.
You're 44. So you coached for how many years, 21 years?
I think this is 23, this one right here, Coach.
23. So it took you probably about 22 years to become an overnight sensation. Is that about right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, no, when you were coaching that team in, you know, what ABA, whatever that league was, what was your motivation?
I just love basketball. You know, getting back to the first thing we were talking about, like, being on the floor with good players and coaching the game and seeing the game played the right way. And, that's what really motivates me. And My ABA experience was kind of a unique deal. It was the year of the NBA lockout. And so the whole basketball world kind of froze, you know, like guys that normally played in Europe weren't playing because Europe was hoping the NBA really would lock out. So some of the pros would come over there. So like at all levels, it just kind of froze. And we had an opportunity where we were, you know, paying guys decent money, really a chance to stay in shape and to play and to practice. It just ended up being a special bond, but at one time on that team, we had five starters from BCS, NCAA tournament team. So just the love of the game and getting in the game. I've always learned so much from players, too. Like, whenever I'm around a great player, I'll ask them, you know, like, who's the best coach you ever played for? Why? Who was the toughest team you ever played against? Why? And that year was just like a walking clinic. I learned more from those players that year than maybe I have from any coach I've worked with.
Let's talk about that. What did you take from Coach Knight?
So many things, Coach. You know this as well, or even better than I do, but just the preparation and the discipline to prepare was ridiculous. I mean, we win a game here. We're really fortunate. Say we beat Kansas the other day, and you guys know what happens in those next 24 hours with phone calls and text messages and trying to get your players back down to reality and all this. But, Coach was always so disciplined. I mean, people don't believe this when I say it, but you guys know this. Like, he watched practice film every day. So, like, even in the middle of the season, he would watch practice film the next morning of yesterday's practice, and just incredible discipline. It didn't matter what was going on off the court and things like that. His will to prepare was second to none.
Chris, I know there's a ton going on in your league. There's no rocking chair games. It's incredible. It's by far, to me, top to bottom, the best league in the country. And, just from myself, and I know Dan, because we were talking about it earlier, we really appreciate you coming on, because I know, speaking for me, I have so much respect for what you're doing and how you're doing it and where you're doing it at, having had tough jobs. And you're making that tough job a great job because of the type of kids you're bringing in, and we wish you nothing but the best.
Thank you, Coach. It means a lot coming from you. I appreciate you guys.
Thank you.
And here they come, folks. Here they come.
It's time for you to storm the podcast. Let's hear from the student section.
All right, guys, we talked about Texas a little bit earlier. Our first question is from Longhorns B12C. How confident are you that Texas is a tournament team after last night?
You know, I'm going to start. Do I think Texas is a tournament team? Right now, they've got bigger issues. I think, do they have a cause playing for one of their teammates that's battling a sickening disease? Yes. Do I think they can play their way into the tournament in that conference? I guess, depending on how they, you know, the emotional toll that they're going to be dealing with on a day-to-day basis. So I'd say no one's making the tournament right now. They're building their resume, and but they're also dealing with something a lot bigger than just making the tournament.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, obviously you're right about the Andrew Jones situation, and we talked about that, you know, earlier in the podcast. But, you know, it's so funny. We either have nobody in the tournament or everybody in the tournament, right? And, you know, you're sitting there 11-5. You got an RPI rank with, you know, a 59 or 58. You just had a decent win. So you got to feel like, all right, you know, we're at least on the way. Now, obviously, the news of Andrew hurts that, and they've lost two of their last four games. But one of them was to Kansas. They've beaten Alabama. I mean, look, you got chances all over the place in that league. So win some games, and then we'll talk. But right now, they're in there with a lot of teams, right, that have decent records that, you know, you can look at it and parse their resume and say no. You can look at it and parse their resume and say, yeah, maybe not, but they got chances. Let's go that route.
All right, our next and last question of the day comes from Ricky. He's wondering if you guys can get into the big matchup at the Garden the other night between Patrick Ewing and Chris Mullin, the, you know, the former players, and facing off.
Go ahead, D-Squared.
Well, I thought it was great. Look, college basketball, the juice of Mullin and Ewing back in the day. You throw Pearl Washington in there as well, and you've got the, you know, my opinion, three of the Mount Rushmore players of the Big East and the development, ESPN, all that kind of stuff. You know, look, both guys, great NBA players, a track record. I've said this and I will continue to say this, a track record of NBA, great, great player. Not okay, but great players isn't good at all, like awful. And it's going to take, you know, time. The LeVert kid is going to be out now for St. John, so that slows it down.
Love it.
I'm sorry. The, you know, Patrick Ewing's schedule was reminiscent of his boss, so good for him. Ewing, Mullen in the Garden representing Georgetown, representing St. John's. I'm all in on that action. Do it every week.
Yeah, I grew up with the Big East and, you know, the great confrontations, the Coach Thompson against Coach Karnisek in the sweater and the towels and Rolly Massimino and the great characters of the game and then the great players. And those games weren't games. In fact, Dave Gavitt used to, originally when the Big East started, they wanted the two different teams after the game to have a post-game meal together hosted by the home team. And that lasted about 2 weeks because every game ended in a fight. I mean, like every game ended in a fight. I mean, if there wasn't a couple of altercations, it wasn't a Big East game. So the Ewing era, the Mullen era, some of the greatest basketball in the history of the Big East, and to see those two guys, you know, not in uniform, but, you know, obviously coaching their teams, their programs, their schools was pretty cool. Now, I do think there's a process. There's a business of college basketball. It's very different than the business of the NBA. And the stick-to-itiveness of that business of college basketball, like after you lose a game like that, are you going to get in the car, drive 3 hours, go watch a recruit? You can have one recruiting class, but you know what? It takes more than one recruiting class to build a program or rebuild a program. So it'll be interesting to watch, but that was pretty cool, man. I mean, you talk about two of the best, and it was really cool to Coach Karnisek at 93 years old was in attendance because there was nothing cooler than walking to a gym recruiting, and Coach Karnisek would come walking in, and he'd be high-fiving everyone, kissing babies. And I just thought it was a really cool night for the Big East and a cool night for basketball.
Yeah, and I think college basketball needs more of that. I do. You know, events. That's an event.
You know what they need more of? And I'm going to get you fired up here, D.
Yeah.
Like seeing Coach Karnisek at that game.
Yeah.
Seeing him at that game. How much would – how good would it be to see unannounced Coach Knight roll into a game at Assembly Hall?
It would be – the roof would blow off. But he's such a, you know, ridiculous, bitter, silly human being at this point that, you know, I can't see it happening. But I will say this. He has been back at Indiana and toured the facilities and all that stuff. And, of course, that's big news here in Indiana. But announced, unannounced, for him to, you know – make it actually what he lied to us all about and said it was about Indiana. you know, he's made it all about him for his ridiculous self to come back to Assembly Hall would be huge for a lot of people. It would be monstrous for, you know, all the alumni that wear red sweaters and, you know, dream of the day. Because, I mean, look, when you do a game at Indiana and they show their hype video, when he is shown, he still gets a heck of an ovation. As much as people are disappointed in him, he still gets a good, great ovation, biggest one there.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. You know, speaking of Pat Ewing, he brings a wealth of experience, though none of it as a head coach, as he leads Georgetown, the program he put on the map, with high hopes of restoring the Hoyas to prominence. There's an article up on ESPN.com by Ian O'Connor on Ewing. The Double Truck Podcast is where you can listen to Ian O'Connor's article in an audio version. Check it out. And a reminder to subscribe to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. And also the Double Truck Podcast. Talk to you guys next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.